Sex Friday. Volume up and get ready. Welcome to my podcast. Usual Friday.
Hey, John Taylor, thank you ever so much for coming onto the show. So tell us a little bit about you.
Oh, well, what can I say? I was born a very long time ago, just about at the end of World War II, when things were pretty tough. And I guess my childhood was somewhat limited and tough, to a point where I remember as a nine-year-old saying, there's got to be more to life than this. And from that age on, I was determined to make more of it because it really wasn't going anywhere. I was really not very good at school, to be honest. I was probably the best daydreamer the school had ever had. I was either a Spitfire pilot or I was off with in the Admiral Benbow with Jim Hawkins, or I was always on an adventure somewhere, Scotland, the Antarctic, or whatever. But when I left school, I had to wake up. And I studied engineering and became a draftsman, design draftsman. That wasn't very lucrative. I was wanting to get married. I wanted a car and I couldn't earn enough. So I actually went into sales, where I did very well. And within a year, I had two cars and was buying my house. Because I did well, I got noticed. Excuse me. And found myself being asked to support overseas companies within the group. And within a few years, I was actually managing companies within the group around the world. And as a result of that, I've lived in the UK, of course, but Switzerland, South Africa, Saudi Arabia, Australia, New Zealand, and Papua New Guinea.
Wow.
I retired a few years ago, thinking I'd had enough of moving around. I felt like a professional nomad, and I had a lot of things I wanted to do for me, and one of them was to write. So that really brings me to where I am.
Wow, no, that's absolutely incredible. I mean, before we go into your book, because like there was something that I wanted to bring up across, is that you've been all over the world. Not many people get this opportunity.
Well, I was very lucky because I had someone else paying the bills. I did, in fact, live in six different countries. Wow. Besides the UK, and I worked in another 20. And it does give you an amazing insight into what goes on in the world, more so than, so I would say, just visiting some places for a holiday. Once you live there, you really start to understand. And that's been one of the most rewarding things, because it changed me, and my whole outlook on life and on the world became different.
Yeah, because before we started the interview, you said that you've been interviewed on radio as well.
I have, yes.
Tell us a little bit about that, the experience.
Well, prior to being interviewed, I lived in Australia for over 30 years, and I was, and still am, a very keen fisherman, and I was a regular guest speaker, talker and answerer of questions, if you like, on a radio station in Queensland in Northern Australia. So I already had quite a bit of experience of talking with a microphone in front of me before I was formally interviewed. So I've always been very relaxed about it. It's never been a problem for me.
Wow, that's incredible. So have you been on like anything like TV or any other radio stations?
Yes, I was on two radio stations earlier this year in Australia. That was with the launch of the book. Yes, I've been on TV here too.
Wow. Or in the UK?
In the UK, yes.
Oh, wow.
And it was purely because of the book, not because of me.
I do find that, you know, talking about the person before talking about the actual book, is it gives readers and listeners an insight of who that person is, if that makes sense to you.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So before we get into the book, which is going to be very close now, can you tell us a little bit about the TV interview?
Yes. In fact, it was I was rather amused by it. And I don't mean that in any unpleasant way. But the interviewer how can I put this nicely? Minutes before the interview took place, he put a shirt on over his dirty T-shirt and had someone try to straighten a tie for him. And, of course, the camera really only showed from the waist up. But, you have this popular image of the newsreaders or the hosts of programs being immaculately dressed and very correct and proper, and they don't sort of scratch their nose or anywhere else whilst you're talking to them. But yes, they do.
Yeah, that's why I have the camera off.
And that was, I find it amusing, I think.
Yeah, that is absolutely fantastic. It's always good to have a little laugh. You got to in this world.
Oh, yes. If you lose your sense of humour, you lose everything.
Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about the book then. I mean, you know, obviously this is what we really want to get out to the audience, is to find out a little bit about what you have written and why you have written. And, you know, let's hear the craze.
Okay. This is my second publication. The first one was, in fact, a book of verse, which I was surprised even got published. But this one is a story that found me. And it's been described as epic. And it was quite an adventure for me in researching and writing it. And I will explain. I read a book by the most wonderful lady named Margaret Humphreys. Now, Margaret Humphreys is the lady who single-handedly uncovered the tragedy of child migration. Now, for people who don't know what child migration is, and it's not surprising that a lot of people don't, if I tell you that between 1935 and 1965, up to 150,000 children were exported from British and Irish orphanages to the Commonwealth countries, mainly South Africa, Canada, New Zealand and Australia. Many of them were told that they were going to families to be adopted, and they would have a life of, as they did in Australia, they were told sunshine and oranges. So they were quite happy to go. Their names were changed ostensibly to match the family they were going to, but in reality, none of them went to be adopted into families. They all went into institutions where they were treated incredibly badly. Many of them, even now, who are well into their senior years, still don't know if they have had or have any family, any relatives living, because their names have been changed and many of the records were destroyed. They really have nowhere to go. And they all have, I'll call it baggage, not hang-ups, because of it. So it was a very, very cruel thing. Anyway, that book, Empty Cradles, sensitised me to the plight of child migrants and children in orphanages generally. And I have to confess, it did disturb me. A year or so later, in Melbourne, in Australia, I met, not deliberately, but I met an ex-child migrant. And he was surprised I knew as much as I did about child migration, and we became quite friendly. And as a result, he invited me to go to a place in Melbourne, a little organisation called Vanish, which is where ex-child migrants and orphans were able to go and meet and feel comfortable. It's sort of a safe house. And I met many ex-child migrants who were so keen to tell me their story that the book I wrote actually needed to be told. I decided then it needed to be told.
Yeah, because I do believe that, you know, inspiration comes from everyone. Everyone has, an inspiration, you know, in some parts of their life.
Well, yes, I'm inclined to agree with you. These people desperately wanted their stories told because it had been suppressed for decades and no one would ever believe them. And it doesn't embarrass me one little bit to tell you that they sobbed their hearts out telling me their story and the things that had happened to them. And I cried along with them. You'd had to be a robot not to. Anyway, this is where the story really found me. But I continued researching and listening to their stories. And I couldn't write for almost 2 years because I was so, let's say, disturbed myself. I didn't know how to deal with this emotionally. I didn't want to upset them anymore, and I didn't want to say things that would get me in trouble with certain authorities. And eventually, my wife actually said, "You do know these people want their story told, don't you?" And of course, that's when I started writing the story. I would add that the book, it's called I Will Find You, is not about child migration. It follows the, I almost said adventures, but I will call it adventures of a three-year-old boy from an English village who goes into an orphanage until he's seven. At seven, he becomes scooped up in child migration. By the way, he goes to the orphanage in 1943, so it's my sort of early era. Child migration finds him in Australia in a horrific institution, one of the worst. And although the book is not about child migration or their treatment, there are two chapters in it that deal with it. But the rest of the book is what happens to him afterwards and his eventual search for his mother. Like many of the children, he ran away, but luckily for him, he wasn't caught and taken back. He met an Aboriginal boy of a similar age, and together they trekked hundreds and hundreds of miles across the Australian outback using Aboriginal survival techniques, direction finding, to get back to the Aboriginal boy's village. And he lives with them until he's 15 years old, same time avoiding detection by the authorities and the police, what have you. The Aboriginal research that I did was absolutely amazing. I learned so much. They are amazing people.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, speaking of research, I was going to ask you a question about, did you actually travel to like Australia to write this story? Because I've noticed that a lot of things prop up with Australia.
I lived there for 30 years plus.
Wow.
So I met Aboriginals. I talked with Aboriginals. I met the child migrants. The 90% of the book was written in Australia.
Because I was going to ask as well, is like, did you write the book before approaching these orphans, or did you already have that in mind and then do the research?
When I first approached them, I hadn't really thought of including them in a book.
Yeah.
Or writing a book about them, but it jumped out and bit me. It was a story that needed to be told, and I just felt that, you know, I was being privileged with their life stories, and that I, in effect, had unwittingly been selected to write their story.
Yeah. So going back to the book, you know, disturbing you, I mean, this is a real, you know, real topic to talk about as well, because obviously you're going through events whilst writing that book. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
What disturbed me was the sheer injustice and the cruelty that was imposed on these children. To be told that your mother didn't love you, didn't want you anymore, and had made you a ward of the state because she didn't care about you anymore was the first blow. Or to be told your parents are dead when they're not. Things like that. To have any ability later in life to trace your origins and find out who you really are and where you're from and have that removed is harrowing for someone to handle. And then you add to that the physical, mental cruelty that these children were exposed to. And I exclude nothing here. I'm talking about lack of food, lack of education, overwork. Some actually died from exhaustion, some committed suicide, sexual abuse and beatings. And I'll give you one example. A particular institution in Australia, the priests had special whips made to whip these children.
Wow.
And they had pieces of metal sewn into the end to give them more effect. One man told me, he said, you watch someone's buttocks when they've been hit just once with this and little spots of blood would come up through the pores.
It is, yeah, I know.
You can't imagine. You can't imagine. The whole thing just disturbed me so much.
Yeah, I can imagine. That is, you know, real deep. So, you know, speaking of, you know, orphans and orphanages, I mean, I never actually thought there was orphanages, of, you know, around. I mean, it's more like today, in this day and age, it's more or less care, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and it's probably because orphanages are fairly expensive to run these days.
Yeah, wow. So where is the book published?
It's published in the UK by Austin Macaulay.
Okay, yeah, I've heard of them.
It's available on the net, on Amazon, or you can get it direct. Many of the Waterstone shops have it. It is actually doing very well. I've done quite a lot of book signings, mostly in Waterstone shops, and we invariably sell out. And quite often we could have sold more than were available at the time.
Yeah, wow. So you're like a fully fledged author.
Yes, wow. I guess I am now, unwittingly. I didn't realise I was going to be, but yes, yeah. I suppose I am.
That is absolutely incredible, and you know, massive congratulations.
Thank you. Well, it inspired me enough. The results of this book has inspired me enough to write another one, which is almost complete.
I was just going to ask you, actually, what is your next steps?
To finish this book.
So what, tell us a little bit about the new book then.
Now I have to be careful not to say too much. it is almost two parallel stories. An English village, again starts with an English village, involves children who disappear without a trace. And whatever searches are done, the children cannot be found. And it starts between the wars, and the main character is in fact what I would call a horseman. He's very proficient at ploughing and handling working horses on the farm. I'm going to give the game away if I'm not careful here.
I tell you what, we can save this for another interview later on in the future, because I don't want you to give anything away, because this book does sound interesting. So once it's done, we can have a brief chat about that. How about that?
All right, that's fine. But what I will tell you, that the parallel story is that part of it takes place in the early 12th century.
Wow.
In the time of King John, about when he lost his jewels in the Wash.
Wow. Yeah. So have you ever thought about with the orphanage book, do you think that maybe in the future that this would be like a book to movie project?
Well, it's interesting that you ask, because a few days ago I was talking to the lady who runs the marketing department at the publisher, and she said, you'll be very pleased to know that a few days ago we were asked by an agency to give us a list of the top 15 books that we feel would make a great film, and we've listed yours at number one.
Wow.
It's interesting. All the reviews on the internet are five star, and so many people say, wow, wouldn't it make a great film?
Yeah.
Which is very flattering.
It is true, to be fair, because you got to think as well, is that when I sit down and I watch certain things on TV, like futuristic stuff or, you know, modern stuff, you think that these are like messages put there for you to get inspiration from. That's the way I embrace life.
Well, yes, looking at things from the right angle, you can take inspiration from most things, I think.
Absolutely. So how do you see the future ahead?
First of all, I want to finish this novel that I'm nearly completed. I'd like to think that does well. I'd be thrilled to bits if this book, I Will Find You, were to become a film. I would be beyond belief. But it's hard work, researching and writing at the same time and trying to be accurate. Is hard work. Most of the best-known authors have people who do that for them. Someone like me needs to do it himself.
Yeah.
And it's very hard, so I decided I probably will not write another book. But I've had an ambition since I was a boy, and that is to play a musical instrument.
Okay.
When I was in my teens, I was very inspired by The Shadows, and I bought a guitar, an electric guitar, and I had about 10 minutes of practice at home, and my father went, let's say, he told me I couldn't practice at home anymore. So it didn't go very far. And I've always hugely admired people who can play musical instruments really well. So just 2 weeks ago, I bought myself a dobro, which I'm going to learn to play, and I'll devote that otherwise writing time into learning that musical instrument. And that's purely for my own satisfaction.
Call me dumb, but what is that?
A dobro?
Hmm.
Okay, it's a... Think of a guitar.
Okay.
But it has a large metal plate, a circular metal plate on the face of it, with a vibrating panel behind it. And it makes a particular sound. And it is a beautiful sound. It's perfect for southern blues and things like that. I just love the sound.
Yeah.
So that's why I bought it.
Oh, wow. No, well, I don't blame you. I mean, I do play the guitar. I've just never, ever heard of one of them.
Look it up on the net.
I think I'm going
to. Also, go to YouTube and get one of the tunes played to, and you'll hear what it sounds like. It's an amazing instrument.
It definitely is. I mean, I learned how to play the guitar using YouTube, and it's just amazing how powerful YouTube can be.
Oh, my word, yes.
Oh, definitely. So, you know, honestly, you know, you have been such a great guest, and you've given us a lot of insight to who you are, what your book is doing, and where it could be going in the future. And what I want to say as well is that please, please keep us updated on the whole process of I Will Find You book, because we really want to know where this is going. If it's going to a book to movie, we want to know. It's going to be absolutely awesome. So is there anything lastly you want to get across to our audience?
Well, the first thing is, I'd love as many people as possible to read the book. And that's not because I get a great return on it, because I don't. In fact, I think the author makes less than anyone.
That's true.
It's because these wonderful people, these child migrants, wanted their stories told. They wanted people to know. Read it for them. But I would emphasize that it's not a total doom and gloom story. It has a lot of adventure in it. There's wit in it. It's quite funny in places. The Aboriginal piece is absolutely fascinating. And then the second part of the book, where the main character sets out to try and find his mother, is it's an epic search, which does in fact eventually bring him back to England. And I'll say no more than that.
Wow. Honestly, thank you ever so much. It's been a great pleasure interviewing you.
It's been a pleasure for me too. Thank you.
You're welcome, and I'll catch up with you after the show.
Okay.
Brilliant.
I'll look for that.
You take care, my friend.
Thank you. Thanks. Bye-bye.
We are on air. It's Talk Best Friday.